It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those places. You can listen to this podcast. You can do that at iTunes. You can also do that at Podbeam or at our website, investinghope.com, and keep up with everything that's going on at Hope Resource Center. We're right in the middle of our year-end campaign, our year-end push. And wow, y'all are blowing us away with your donations, and we couldn't be more grateful for that. So you can continue to give at Hope at investinghope.com and click on the big blue donate button. You can also see the donate button on our Facebook page, and just are blown away at the support. This past weekend, we had a concert with Lawson Bates and Emily Ann Roberts, and Andy Lefwich was there, and we had it at Black Oak Heights Baptist Church. You probably seen us if you're watching local television here in Knoxville. You probably saw us on all the local channels as we were leading up to the concert. And then this past Saturday, had the concert again at Black Oak Heights Baptist Church. And it was just a great night. Had over 500 people in attendance. And just was a fun night of country music, of Christian music. The gospel was shared. We talked about life and Hope Resource Center, and I don't have the final tally just yet, but thousands of dollars were raised for life at the concert, and we are excited about that, and it really was a good night, and look forward to more opportunities like that coming in the future, as we will continue to have probably at least one benefit concert a year, if not more than that. Just as a great time to bring people together, hear some good music, and also stand for life. So again, want to thank Lawson Bates and his family. Want to thank Emily Ann Roberts and Andy Lefwich for coming out and helping us out. And certainly want to thank Black Oak Heights Baptist Church for allowing us to use their building on a Saturday night. And for those of you that have ever been on a staff or volunteer at a church, you know Saturday nights are not a good time to do things because you got to have church on Sunday morning. But people came together on Saturday night to get the worship center back into into working order so they would be prepared for church on Sunday morning. And we again want to thank Black Oak Heights Baptist Church for allowing us to do that. So today on the show, what we're going to do is we're going to walk through a couple articles that have caught my attention, this week. One of them is from the ERLC talking about why it's important to be pro-life and what our life ethic means for human dignity. And we'll get to that in a second. The first article I want to discuss, and I hesitate to call it an article, it's a blog, but it focuses, it's from someone that is pro-choice, and I would venture to say not just pro-choice, but sometimes I hesitate to say that people are pro-abortion as if they are for more abortions occurring. You know, typically when you see someone that's pro-choice, and if you say they're pro-abortion, they say, wait, I'm not pro-abortion. I just think a woman has the right to choose. And I can disagree with that, but at least I can say, okay, that's a better way of saying it. But then there are some people out there that are absolutely pro-abortion. And what they want to see is more abortions occurring in this country. And frankly, they're upset that the numbers are on the decline. And so there was a blog this week written by someone named Danielle, and what she does in this blog, and Planned Parenthood shared this on their Twitter feed. That's how I came across this blog. And what she tries to do is show that those that have miscarriages and those that have abortions, what this person tries to do is say that they are the exact same person, that there's no difference. Here's what she said. There is a common misconception that the mom who miscarries is a very different person than the woman who aborts. But I'm here to say there is no difference. I am, and this is again her words, I am both those women. I've had 5 pregnancies, 1 live birth, 3 miscarriages, and 1 abortion. In the eyes of those looking to curtail reproductive rights, I'm therefore 1 part family values, 3 parts deserving of pity, and 1 part going to hell for what I've done. So first off, let's stop there. So this author of this blog is saying that pro-lifers believe those that have had abortions should go to hell. That is just not true. Now, are there some folks that would claim to be pro-life that would say that? Sure, but they certainly do not represent the majority of people that say they are pro-life. So let's start there. That's just not true. We are a grace people. We are a loving people. That's why we do what we do at Hope Resource Center, is because we love the mom. And if the mom walks out of Hope Resource Center and gets an abortion, she's going to get a follow-up call from us. And then if she finds herself pregnant again, guess what? We're going to see her and we're going to love her. We're not going to say, you need to go to hell. We're not going to say those things. We're going to love her and we're going to be there for her. And we're going to assist her in walking through the choices that are in front of her. And obviously, yes, we're going to encourage her to have the child. But to say that those that have had miscarriages and those that have chosen to have abortions are the same person is frankly crazy. And so she goes further. She says, women are having as many miscarriages as they're having abortions, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's National Center for Health Statistics. Of the pregnancies in 2010, 65% resulted in live births. 17% were miscarried and 18% ended in abortion. And yet those two results of pregnancy, unplanned or not, are treated very differently by society in general and by the anti-choice, again, that's what they call us, anti-choice advocates legislating away women's rights to choose. In this country, women who experience miscarriage are shown mercy and grace, and women who choose abortion are attacked and condemned. Well, let me stop right there. Women who experience miscarriage are shown mercy and grace. Why? Because they did not choose miscarriage. And so I say this as a dad that has had to look at his wife and had to hug his wife and cry with his wife because we went through a miscarriage after our firstborn. So Gavin was born, and then we found ourselves pregnant again after Gavin, and what happened? We had a miscarriage. Now, at no point did my wife or did I say, you know what, this is just like us choosing to have an abortion, because we didn't choose the miscarriage. We were prepared to have that child. We planned for that child. We looked forward to a future with that child. We were deciding which room was going to be that child's bedroom. We had told all of our friends, our coworkers. We had told parents that another grandchild was coming into the world. But we miscarried. Now, that wasn't my wife's fault. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't something we sat down and said, you know what? I think we want to have a miscarriage. No, it wasn't that. It happened. And then we shared that story with people, and I had multiple people come up to us who have faced the same things and had miscarriages. And they've mourned the loss of their child. So to equate that with choosing an abortion, well, it's a far stretch. A far, far stretch. And then in this author to say that women who choose abortion are attacked and condemned, I can at least speak for what we do at Hope Resource Center. We are not attacking and condemning anyone. Is abortion a sin in the eye of a Christian? Absolutely. Does the cross cover sin for those that are saved? Absolutely. So there's no attacking. There's no condemning. They're simply saying there are other choices in front of you. And we're here for you. And frankly, in 2017 in our society, those that have abortions are raised up as heroes in most of the media and in most of your mainline websites. We constantly see articles from Slate and from Vox. Planned Parenthood is championed. They're given $500 million a year from our government. So don't tell me that the women that choose abortion are condemned. If anything, in today's society, they are celebrated. So I think it's, I could go ahead and read a bunch of this, but I'm not going to. But what I would say is the argument that it's the same. Now, yes, in terms of medical terms, a miscarriage is called a spontaneous abortion. But again, it still doesn't mean that the woman that has a miscarriage feels the exact same way as someone that chooses abortion. Why? Because someone that's having a miscarriage isn't setting up an appointment and saying, you know what, I think I want to choose a miscarriage today. It's not happening. And I find it odd, too, that they try to make that comparison when we're told constantly that those that have an abortion, there's no lasting effects. There's no mourning of the child. But yet, what I know for a fact is those that have a miscarriage, there is mourning of that child. There are lasting effects. I mean, I know for me, every January, I think about what could have been with the baby that miscarried. And we know women that have chosen abortion that are impacted for the rest of their life. We know that to be true. But the narrative of the day, the narrative of the culture is, oh no, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And as a matter of fact, the narrative of the culture now apparently is saying that those that have miscarriages are exactly the same as those that choose abortion. You go talk to the mom that has had multiple miscarriages and has longed for a child her entire life and is yet to have one. And then you look at her and you say, is this the same as choosing to abort a baby? And I can promise you, she's not going to agree with that statement. We'll be back. So the question that I want to pose now is, why are we pro-life? Now the first segment we talked about a blog that was written, and what they're trying to do is connect those that have gone through a miscarriage with those that have chosen abortion and saying that they're the same thing, which they're not. But what we know is those that have had an abortion and those that have gone through a miscarriage, their lives will never be the same. That's what we know, okay? And so now the question is, well, why are we pro-life? And how should that drive our everyday interaction? As Christians, what kind of conversation should we be having? What kind of activism do we need to get involved in? And normally I don't do this, but what I want to do is read an article by a friend of mine, Daniel Darling, who works for the ERLC. And I just think he put into words what we try to say here every single week. And the title of this article is Why Human Dignity Shapes Our Public Activism. And the only reason I'm going to read it to you today is because I don't want you to miss it. And so I could easily say, go to the ERLC, you'll see it on their website. But I would prefer to just read what he wrote to you. So he says, the Christian concept of human dignity, that each person is created in the image of God and has worth assigned not by their utility but by their creator, shapes and informs the way we engage contentious issues in the public square. We work for laws that recognize the life of the unborn, not as part of a political agenda, but because we believe what the Bible tells us about unborn persons. They are not clumps of tissue, but people worthy of dignity and life. We work for laws that protect the consciences of the religious minorities, even those with whom we disagree, because people were not created in the state, but in the image of God. State-coerced religion undermines the personhood of the individual. We work for laws that recognize the dignity of immigrants and refugees, because they are more than people groups or faceless masses, but people, again, created in the image of God. We work for laws to protect the elderly in a society that increasingly sees the aged and infirm or terminally ill as burdensome. We say that elderly people always have inherent dignity, despite their perceived utility. We work against predatory economic industries that prey on the vulnerable through gambling or payday lending practices. Because the poor are not merely ATMs from which money can be squeezed, but whole persons with dignity. We speak out against sexual predation of women and children because women and children are not mere objects for gratification, but whole persons with dignity and worth. We work to fight drug addiction because addiction assaults the dignity of image bearers, holding them captive to destructive substances. We even engage in robust arguments and difficult policy debates with dignity, recognizing that our ideological opponents are not avatars to be crushed, but people created in the image of God. Most of all, we work to equip the Church of Jesus Christ, who conquered sin, death, and the grave, and who offers in himself reconciliation to the Creator. The gospel fully restores us to our image-bearing purposes. We both fight for religious liberty that honors the conscience and creates the space for the gospel to advance, and we equip pastors and church leaders to apply the gospel to a changing culture. Applying the doctrine of the image of God to our public activism allows us to fully love our neighbors as ourselves by speaking up for their welfare whenever their dignity is being assaulted. It helps us transcend parties and movements and allows us to steward well our influence in the halls of power, in the public square, and in the church. Yeah, Daniel nailed it. Okay, so the reason why we're pro-life is because we believe that there's a creator that created image bearers, right? We believe that everyone we come in contact with bears the image of our God. And so if we believe that to be true, then we don't see those that disagree with us as enemies. We don't see those that have a different party affiliation as enemies. We don't see those that have different religions as enemies. We see them as image bearers. And so then that's going to determine the way we interact with them. That's going to determine the work we do at Hope Resource Center. It's going to determine how we interact with the patients that we see. In just a few weeks, I'm going to be going to Washington, D.C. with hundreds of thousands of people for the March for Life. I'll stand on a stage and I'll speak to a couple thousand young people, college-age students, high school students, about the theme of the march, which is called Love Saves Lives. Now, it'll be a peaceful march. It'll be a peaceful protest. It'll be a good time with thousands and thousands of people there. But what it's also going to be is an uplifting, an elevating of love over hate, an elevating of love over bitterness, over anger. You see, I'm not going to Washington, D.C. to just air out all of my anger. I'm not going to be involved with the march because I'm bitter and angry and I see enemies on the other side. No, I'm going because we have a message of hope. I'm going because our model works. I'm going because, in fact, love does save lives. We see it every day at Hope Resource Center. We see it in the faces of all the babies that are going to get to celebrate Christmas for the first time this year. Why? Because their mom came to Hope and chose life. You see, the old me was motivated by anger. The old me was motivated by bitterness. The old me was wrapped up, dealt with the sin of idolatry when it came to politics. And praise God, he pulled me from that. And now I don't see people that disagree with me as an enemy. I don't see people as simple pawns to be used in a political game. I see them as image bearers. And so part of what I'm going to say when I'm in Washington is, are we prepared to just march every single year? Or are we going to go back to our cities, back to our towns, back to our communities and say, I need to stand up. I need to do more. I need to do more than vote. You do need to vote, but are you doing more than that? Are we partnering with pregnancy centers all across this country? Are we allowing the fact that we believe those we come in contact with bear the image of our God? Are we allowing that fact to drive us in our interactions? Or do we read the blog that I mentioned earlier where someone is trying to conflate and compare and somehow say that abortion and miscarriage is the same thing? Do we read that with complete disdain and anger and want to go and attack that person that wrote that? Or do we say, here's a broken young lady who has dealt with loss herself through miscarriage and through abortion? You see, because that's going to determine your pro-lifeness. And frankly, folks, there's enough hate and anger and bitterness going around. We don't need to add to it as pro-lifers. We need to come at it and say, we are unapologetically pro-life. And here's what that looks like. We are not motivated by anger. We are not motivated by hate. But if we do the work that we've been called to do through the pregnancy centers and other avenues, what we will see is a heart change of the people. And when the heart changes in the people, well, the state house takes care of itself. Washington, D.C. takes care of itself. But are we prepared to have those conversations with our neighbors? Are we prepared to see a difference be made? That's the question we have to answer. We'll talk more when we come back. So today we have looked at a couple articles. So ultimately what we try to do here, and I know that some of you probably listen every week and go, you kind of talk about the same thing every week. Well, I do that with purpose because I want us to understand the importance of our life ethic. And that the narrative matters, that our heart matters, and our foundation matters. And so if we are simply pro-life because we see the other side as enemies, if we are simply pro-life because we want to crush the other side, or if we're pro-life because fill in the blank, well then there's an issue there. So are there reasons to be angry at the other, at those that claim to be pro-choice? Sure. At least in terms of their policies and their ideology, there's definitely reasons. Are there reasons to be angry at abortion clinics? Absolutely. No question. And we should do everything we can from the standpoint of that's why we have the doors open at Hope Resource Center. Because what we know is if we put our model in place and we serve the men and women of this community, that model is going to work and we're going to see abortion clinics close. What we also know is we should, as we can, seek legislation that will help people stand for life. Seek legislation that will decrease abortions, that'll make it harder to get abortions, that will regulate abortion clinics. There's nothing wrong with that. We do not hide behind, or we do not mask that. That is what we believe. But what we don't need is we don't need those that get a chance to speak in front of a camera, or those that get a chance to be on air, or those that get a chance to speak to large numbers of people. What we don't need is for them to say things that are going to hurt our movement. We need folks that have really thought through this stuff, have conversations about it, prayed about it, read up on it. And so there is a righteous anger when I hear that we have aborted 63 million babies since 1973. And we should be angry about that. But where do we direct the anger? And then how are we to then interact and seek a change? And what are we doing to seek a change? Are we having conversations? Are we getting involved with work on the ground? Are we getting involved with pregnancy centers? Are we getting involved with pro-life organizations all across this country. Because what you see with the March for Life in D.C. is, for a long time, evangelicals kind of stood to the side and wasn't involved. And what we saw was the Catholics led the charge for that. And the Catholics have been leading the charge for that since 1973. Helped with opening pregnancy centers. And then evangelicals got involved. Churches got involved. And so after, you know, a couple years ago, what we saw was the ERLC and Dr. Moore said we needed to be more active when it comes to the March for Life. And so you saw a partnership between Focus on the Family, ERLC, evangelical arms, and then the Catholic arm with the March for Life. And what you see now in D.C. is you see a team effort in seeing that change. Now are there disagreements on theology and the way things are done in a church setting? Sure. But we come together on the life issue. And so we come together on the life issue, and that's what we have in Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. And you'll see more and more people, not just Southern Baptists, but other denominations coming together and saying we need to do more for life. What we're seeing also is we're seeing secular folks come out and say, look, we disagree with you on just about everything, but we do agree that life has value and deserves to be protected. And so we're seeing that. We're seeing more and more millennials, more and more young people come out and say, look, I just cannot be okay with abortion. And we're seeing a decline in abortion. Now what you'll find with that is you'll find some people on the pro-life side saying, well, that's happening because of the work of pregnancy center. It's happening because we're seeing abstinence pushed in certain areas. It's happening because better decisions are being made. And then you'll see people on pro-choice side say the decline in abortions points to birth control and the effects of it. It points to the day after pill, the morning after pill. It points to Obamacare. It points to all these different things. And so you still have people kind of running to their corners to try to figure out why are abortions declining. And there's a number of different reasons for that. But what we know at Hope Resource Center is the work that we're doing, the amount of ultrasounds that we're providing, we're seeing a major difference. What we're seeing across the country is laws that have been put in place to regulate abortion clinics or to say, you know, put in waiting periods before, after an ultrasound, you have to wait 48 hours or 24 hours or 72 hours before you can get an abortion. That you have to sit down with an actual doctor, that you can't do it via Skype. We're seeing some good movement in with the life issue. So work is being done and successes are being had. Which is, again, why we don't need to be driven by anger. The first pregnancy center wasn't open because somebody was angry. The first pregnancy center was open because they saw people that were in need and they wanted to step in and meet that need. And they also saw babies losing their life to abortion and they wanted to step in and see that changed. Was there anger? Sure. But out of that anger, they didn't say, okay, because we're so angry, we're going to do this. No, they said, we love our neighbors so much that we're going to open up pregnancy centers and we're going to serve them at no cost. And we've had this conversation multiple times on this show where we talk about the no-cost model of most pregnancy centers. Now, why do we have that in place? Again, because we want to remove obstacles. You know, it continues to boggle my mind that abortion clinics will say, we need more government funding. Abortion clinics will say pregnancy centers are manipulative and they're coercing women and they're anti-choice and they're not being honest and blah, blah, blah. They'll say all of those things. But what concerns me and what I don't understand is why one of those journalists, won't look at the abortion clinic and say, if you believe this so much, if you believe in abortion so much and you believe it's a right and you believe it's a fundamental health care right, if you believe this, and if you believe that birth control is so important, and if you believe all of these things, then why are you not just opening up your doors and not charging a dime to anybody? You know, they receive $500 million a year from the federal government, and then they also fundraise. They make millions of dollars off of abortions, and they also fundraise. They pay thousands and thousands of dollars to political candidates, and they also fundraise. So that's the part that I don't understand. Because what you have with pregnancy centers is if you combine all the pregnancy centers in this country and their budgets, it will not even equal, not even anywhere close to what Planned Parenthood alone gets from the federal government every single year. Think about that. Roughly around 3,000 pregnancy centers in this country. I think Planned Parenthood is roughly 600. I may be missing that a little bit. Roughly 600 Planned Parenthoods across the country. And our budget's not anywhere near, if you add all of our budgets up, not anywhere near what Planned Parenthood is receiving from the federal government. But yet they still raise money, yet they still call themselves a nonprofit. And again, if they would just come out and say, look, we believe in this so strongly that we're going to provide these services at no cost, then I may listen to that, but they're not going to do that. Because not only do they want you to agree with them, they want you to pay for the abortion. They want you to pay for the abortion doctors. They want you to pay for those that are helping with the procedures. And that's where the problem comes in for me. So again, all of that I just said, does that make me angry? Sure, it makes me angry. But I don't get up every morning and go to work at Hope Resource Center because I'm angry. We didn't open our doors 20 years ago because we were angry. We open our doors and I get up every morning to see a difference be made. The ladies that work at Hope Resource Center, the medical professionals, the administrative folks, everyone that comes to work there. We do that out of love for our neighbor, not out of hate toward a political party or a hate toward a group of people. We go to work because we want to serve those in need. And you help us do that. You help us do that with your prayers. You help us do that with your gifts, which you can make at investinghope.com. You help us do that by referring patients to us. You help us do that by partnering with the church that you go to that then partners with us. All of those things work together. And when we do those things, what we see is lives changed, lives saved, babies born. Those things should be celebrated. So celebrate them with us. We'll be back. Now all that I want is you. Yeah, that's another show in the books. We talked a lot about life and hope and life ethic and human dignity and all of those things which we cover quite a bit every single week here. If you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. You can listen to this podcast on iTunes, Podbeam, or just go to investinghope.com and click on the About Us tab, and then you'll see podcasts there, and you can listen to it on the website. So I would recommend subscribing to it on iTunes or at Podbeam, and you'll just get a notification every time a new one is uploaded, and then you can listen to it from there. Next week, I'm hoping to have a guest. I don't have a name yet, but we'll let you know when you tune in next week. It's always a fun time to talk to folks. We're getting closer to Christmas, so I'm sure next week we're going to talk about year end. We'll also talk about Christmas music and Christmas traditions, and of course, just have some fun on that show as Christmas is quickly approaching. I would selfishly ask you to pray for my wife as she is with child, and We're expecting our fourth child. January 21st is the due date. That's going to be a stretch. We'll probably, my wife will probably be induced earlier than that. But it's pretty cool that my child is due on Sanctity of Life Sunday. Just, the Lord saw fit to do that. So, it's going to be another little girl, and so we're excited about that, trying to get the other three kids ready for a new addition to the house, trying to get us ready for a new addition to the house with a new child coming in. So, looking forward to that, but please be praying for her as she, as you can imagine, is in some discomfort and things like that. And she's a hard worker, so she's still working every day and kind of pushing through it. But your prayers would be appreciated for her and the new baby, the new little girl, the latest little girl to be added to the Wood household. So everything's happening in the next few weeks. We have Christmas coming up, and then we have a brand new child coming in. I'm going to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. I'll be January and February. I will be at a church pretty much every single Sunday. I'm going to be at a different church speaking about life and hope. And I'm really excited about the message that I'm going to be sharing this year. Not your typical Sanctity of Life message, but going to be focusing on how we as believers need to be vehicles for the gospel. And that's really what being pro-life is about for Christians, is we are vehicles for the greatest news this world has ever seen. And so part of the work we do at Hope is being gospel sharers. And so that's what we're doing. And I would encourage you, let's see if I can name them all. I'll be at Black Oak Heights Baptist Church. I'll be at Shoreline Church. I'll be at Seventh-day Christian Assembly. I'll be at Ignition Church, Calvary, both Calvaries, Calvary Chapel and Calvary Baptist. Where else will I be? I'll be at a couple others as well. The Point will be coming up in later on as well. So a lot of churches. Before January gets here, I'll bring that list in and I'll name them all off to you in the times that they'll be meeting. But really looking forward to that and just kind of partnering with the churches, because we're just really excited about the churches we partner with here in Knoxville, and couldn't be more blessed to have those pastors partner with us, the church families partner with us, and really we couldn't do the work we do without the local church here in Knoxville. So certainly thankful for them. But that's going to be a fun and busy time, the month of January and February. So in the midst of all the craziness that we're going to have of bringing a new baby into the Wood family, I'm also going to be spending a lot of time speaking, going and visiting with different churches. So if you go to one of those churches, hopefully I can meet you and talk to you there. Should be fun, and come out again. I'll have that list for you in the coming weeks and lay that out. And if you get a chance, if you can take some time off and go to the March for Life in Washington, D.C., I would encourage that. Also in conjunction with that is the Evangelicals for Life conference put on by the ERLC and the Southern Baptist Church. And we would encourage you to participate in that. I'm going to be up there with a number of staff members as well, from Hope. And then, there'll be a couple hundred thousand people in D.C. to March for Life. And just highly recommend it. A couple weeks ago, we talked to Matt Hawkins of the ERLC about the March and about Evangelicals for Life conference. And just going to be a great time. You can get tickets now online to do that. And I would really, really encourage you at some point in your life to participate in the March for Life. Hopefully that it won't be going on much longer, as we'll see abortion become a footnote in history. But until that day comes, we're prepared to go to D.C. in March and join hundreds of thousands of people to say that life has value and matters. And so looking forward to that. We'll be talking about that in the coming weeks, as we always do here every single week. It's so much fun. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting.